You're tuned to KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm Shelley Schlender, and with me in the studio are a number of experts on hot lunches. We've been featuring school lunches all this week in honor of the fact that the USDA has upgraded their standards for hot lunches, and it turns out that Boulder has one of the nation's finest programs for serving healthy lunches, an innovative program provided by Chef Ann Cooper, who heads up food services here in Boulder. That doesn't mean that everybody likes the school lunches, though. Among middle school students, about 70% don't eat hot lunches. So we've been featuring their views and why they prefer their sack lunches, whether the sack lunches are healthy or not, and also what might be done to improve the likelihood that kids eat a healthier hot lunch. Before we start talking about this, let's look at who we have here in the studio right now. Welcome, Chef Ann Cooper. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
My name is Ann Cooper. I'm the Director of Food Services for Boulder Valley School District. We are serving about 10,000 meals a day here in Boulder. We have 50 schools spread over 550 square miles, and we work really hard to try and get food, good food for kids.
And welcome, Haley.
I'm Haley. I'm an eighth grader at Casey Middle School, and yeah, I really enjoy eating hot lunch, and I think that more kids should try it because it really is good.
How about you, Bella?
I'm also an eighth grader at Casey Middle School, but I do not enjoy school lunches.
And Deidre McElveen, welcome for being here at KGNU. You are Sean's mother, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
And can you, let's go ahead and start with you, because we just, for our listeners, if you were tuned in this morning, you got to hear what Sean brought for lunch one day. And do you remember what it was, Deidre, as you listened to that? I think it had chocolate milk.
Yeah, chocolate milk, a clementine, a fruit stick, and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
And I went ahead and added up all the calories in that and the percentage of that that was sugar versus other food. It was a very high calorie lunch, and it was about 1,000 calories. But it was a high calorie lunch. It had about 1,000 calories in it, and about half of those calories, maybe more, were sugar. Now, you're a physiologist, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that jive with a healthy lunch for kids?
Well, two of the things is, I mean, it's specific to the child, for sure. If you listen to Sean's earlier rendition of the interview that the two kids had at Casey regarding the school lunches, one of the issues, I think, for the middle schoolers that don't participate in the school lunch program at this point is their past history and their time before Ann got on board. I think they have an aversion to it because of that. I think the other issue that happens in the school lunch program right now is just time. That's the kids' social time. And so you have to remember that they're getting probably 20 minutes to get everything in that they can.
That's right. It's not a very long time for lunch. Let's have our two middle school students talk about that for a minute. How much does the amount of time you have for lunch affect whether or not you want to try a hot lunch? Let's start with you, Haley.
Well, every day I pretty much notice that the minute the bell rings for lunch, the line just starts to get longer and longer and longer. And I think that deters a lot of kids from eating hot lunch, part of them because they'll spend 10 minutes in line and then they've got the 10 minutes to eat and socialize. And so I think a lot of kids decide that they're going to just pack a cold lunch and then be able to have the time with their friends and to sit down instead of waiting in that long lunch line.
How about for you, Bella?
I feel the same way. Like, the line just gets longer and longer as the day or as like the lunch goes on. And then it does start to shorten up, but you only have like 5 minutes left to eat once you finally get your food. And if you don't make it in time in the line, you're waiting there forever. And especially if you're at the end of the line, it really sucks.
You know, the other issue that I've heard from some students is that it's hard if you have friends that are eating sack lunches and you want to socialize with your friends and you're in the lunch line even for an extra 3 minutes. That's painful because when you sit down, your friends are already eating and maybe done with their lunch. Is that an issue?
Yeah, that definitely is an issue. And the fact that there's a limited amount of seats at tables, and so sometimes you'll be waiting in that lunch line and all of a sudden the table with your friends is filled up and then your chance of sitting there is pretty much done, and everyone's pretty much done eating and moved on.
And Cooper, how does this match with what you hear from students?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the challenges we face is, from the food service department standpoint, we don't set either lunch times, what time of day we have lunch, or how long they are. And when we look at schools, I mean, some of the schools in the district have lunches as short as 15 minutes, and then, you know, a lot of them are 20 minutes. And even if our lines, like at Casey, if we're doing 350 lunches, which is not an abnormal day for us, you know, even with two lines, trying to get everybody through, if we can do it in 10 minutes, it's actually not too bad when you think of how many kids that is. But then when you only have 10 minutes to eat, I really think that we really should have, not only in Boulder, but all across the country, we really should have, you know, 30, 40-minute lunches. I mean, if we expect kids to eat healthy, whether they bring food from home or eat hot lunch, they need more time to eat.
And what about the disparity it causes if kids with packed lunches basically get to be at the front of the line? Meaning that they get to sit down and eat before the other children do.
Well, I that's absolutely an issue. I mean, I've seen schools do different things, certainly not middle schools, but I've seen elementary schools have all the kids come in and sit so everyone has a seat, and then have the hot lunch kids go in line. We've got one of our schools that lets the kids having hot lunch go into the cafeteria 5 minutes before the other kids. So there's definitely creative ways to get around it. But at the end of the day, we have very short lunch times.
And, you know, for our listeners, this is a call-in show. You can call us here at 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242 for this special opportunity to talk with experts from many angles of hot lunches, students, a parent, Chef Ann Cooper. One question, though, that perhaps we should look at right now is, why does this really matter? What does it really matter what kids eat for lunch? Does it matter what anybody eats for anything when it comes to health and what comes to our nation's future and all that other stuff? I mean, how big a deal is this? Ann Cooper, let's start with you.
It's a really, really big deal. I mean, we are now living in a country where over 35% of us are overweight or obese. We've got the CDC and the HHS saying that if we don't turn this around, every single person in our country is going to be overweight or obese by 2040. We see children as young as 10 years old now with liver problems. We see heart disease as now becoming a pediatric illness. I mean, we really have to change how we feed our kids and change how we serve food and teach them about food.
Well, that's right. What you said about heart disease being a pediatric illness, there is a movement in the country right now to give statin drugs to children as a matter of course because of the thought that they're getting so unhealthy that they're all going to need it. Deidre McElveen, as a physiologist and a mom, what do you think of that?
Well, I think I'd like to give kudos to Anne and her food project. And I'd like to say that besides Sean not having the school lunch and feeling like that's been an aversion based on the history of what he did in elementary school and what the program was then, I have a third grader also that's in Boulder Valley School District. And since day one of kindergarten, for him, the food school project has been in operation, and he has hot lunch every day and loves it. And I think, you know, obviously, as Sean said in his interview, we have healthy breakfasts, we have healthy dinners. And, you know, I get what I get out of Sean at lunch just to make sure that he eats something within that 20-minute framework of time while he's talking and entertaining his friends. With Ian and the children that are in his school, I see it being an educational thing that they learn what a healthy lunch looks like and how it affects their day. But Ian enjoys it. He looks on that school calendar, the school lunch calendar, each day and says, oh, we're having tofu whatever today. I can't wait. So I think for some of the kids that might not be getting the home support of the nutrition, this is a learning process as well. It's a could be like a class just based on what they're learning getting at the hot lunch.
And I can hear what you're saying there, Deidre, that it's most important what parents feed their kids at home, mm-hmm. and the lessons that they give, and not to force anybody to eat anything because that just backfires. But I hear another message in there that I wonder about, and that's that if a child is able to get healthy food at home, they're not one of the ones that has to have healthy food at lunch.
No, they do. I think that based on the fact that Sean has an aversion to trying it, I get what I get from him in the cold lunch. So I'm supporting it on the other ends. But for my younger son, who has been introduced to the hot lunch program in a positive way, I think seeing the other children, everyone's learning about what a healthy lunch is. And I think that that's an important thing. And that's what I think the project is instilling in our kids. And I think that's an important aspect of it.
You know, we have a caller who wants to ask you all a question. Welcome to KJNU, Sandra. Are you there?
Yeah, actually, it's Sandin.
Sandin, hello.
Going back a little bit, we were talking about the amount of time the kids have to eat lunch, and I've noticed that in my kids' school, and I've got 2 to 3 times the amount of time that they do, and I know how to get the job done right away. But does anybody have any information on what it's like in other countries and what it's looked like historically? I seem to remember I had more time than 20 minutes to eat lunch.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
Well, Sandin, thank you. Let's have Ann Cooper take that question. Ann, is America typical in terms of how much time it gives students for lunch?
We are not. And it historically, I mean, if you look back, you'll see that lunches used to be 60 minutes, 45 minutes, times like that. When you go to Italy, where I've been looking at the school lunch program in Rome, they have an hour and a half to 2 hours. France is similar. And it's really because they value that time of feeding kids and time at the table together in a way that we just have not in our country. And I also think that No Child Left Behind, which thankfully Colorado can get slightly away from now, has really pushed the teachable minutes, and that with budget cuts has really shortened the school day. And I think there's nobody is looking to have lunch be so short and be so insignificant. But there's all of these things, all these pressures from budgets to No Child Left Behind to testing. All of these things just pressure us. And school lunch is one of the things that has just been cut and cut and cut.
Well, Sandin, what do you think of that idea of expanding school lunches?
I think it's a complicated, as you just mentioned. I didn't really realize that because it's not something I pay attention to that closely. But I understand how different pressures go in, and then it's a systemic problem. It's going to take a systemic fix, and that's going to be tough.
There you have it. Go ahead.
That's what I think.
thank you for calling.
And for all right, thank you.
You're welcome. And for our other listeners, the number to call is 303-442-4242. Haley and Bella, as middle school students, how would it work if we had a longer lunch, which would mean probably that you'd have to start school earlier or have school end later?
I think that it would kind of be a benefit, but also kind of, like, bad, because we've kind of grown to eat fast due to the time that we have for lunch. I know that me and my friends always want to go outside, so we always try to, like, eat our lunch fast and try to get done as soon as we can so we can go outside and play, but it's just not really worth it.
You know, Bella and Haley, I've seen you all hanging out with the journalism department, being able to have some snacks a little early. And it looks to me like when you're doing that, you enjoy the fact it's a quieter environment. There's more leisure. You get to actually talk without shouting. Am I seeing that right?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I think that when we have that time, it's more focusing on, like, enjoying your food, not just how fast can I get it done to go play outside, and socializing in the sense where there's no pressure, no time limit. It's just there, and you're just there to enjoy it while you have the time.
Now, I do notice, though, that I don't see many of you eating the hot lunch when you're there hanging out in the journalism department, that you prefer snacks, mm-hmm. like pretzels or Girl Scout cookies. I've been a spy. I've seen these things. So how does that fit in with your thoughts about what is the best kind of food to eat for your future?
Well, a lot of times a lot of us don't eat. I know a lot of people, especially on late start mornings, who don't eat breakfast at all. And so there's always that mid-morning kind of hunger, kind of want of snacking. And I think if you eat it in moderation, it's not going to be a huge problem.
And Cooper, I see you nodding your head yes.
Well, I think what we all need to remember about food is there's everyday food and celebratory food. So we're not going to vilify snacks. I mean, that's ridiculous. And, you know, last night was Valentine's Day, or yesterday was Valentine's Day. And I'm sure there was, like, a lot of chocolate eaten and a lot of champagne drank. But you don't do that every day, and I think, or at every meal. And I think snacks are fine, part of a healthy diet, but they really need to be part of a healthy diet and in moderation.
Let's take another caller. Lynn, welcome to KGNU.
One thing you do eat every day is oil. And I heard tofu mentioned, and these could both very likely be GMO products. Are you using GMO products in your food through the program?
Thank you, Lynn, for your question. And Cooper, how about it? What is the GMO level in your school lunch program?
Well, I need to contextualize a little. You know, part of the way we get the food we actually serve our kids is through the government, and the government commodity food program does not in any way eliminate GMOs. And because we're in a country, unfortunately, where we don't label GMOs, which is really unfortunate, it's hard to actually know where we have GMO products. And since GMO products are in about 3/4 of the food that you actually consume from grocery stores, they happen to be everywhere. We are not GMO-free by any means. Our food cost for a school lunch is approximately $1.15, and for that we have to serve protein, grain, fruit, vegetable, and milk. So there's a lot of things we're trying to get into the $1.15. We try and serve natural and organic as much as possible. We cook everything from scratch, but we are far from GMO-free, which is really unfortunate.
And so I hear you saying, Anne, that in a perfect world, you would like to serve more GMO-free food, but it would mean that you'd need a perfect budget and more
Certainly a more realistic budget. I mean, for all of you listening and people who pack their kids' lunches, you know, can you pack a healthy lunch for $1.15? And I think you would find that very challenging.
In fact, I wonder how many people out there can pack a healthy lunch for $3, which I believe is the cost for middle school students if they're paying full price for a meal. And what percentage of students pay full price for their lunches?
In the district, we're about 20% free or reduced, so about 80% of our students would pay full price.
And then a question for our middle school students. Haley and Bella, how much does the issue of GMOs matter to you in the food you eat?
I guess I don't really think about it that much. It's just sort of, you know, I just sort of take what I'm eating, and I guess maybe as we get older we'll pay a little more attention to that, but as of right now I don't really pay attention.
How about you, Bella?
I'm not even really sure what GMOs are.
Well, so there you have it, that it's an issue that's on the minds of some of our listeners. And Lynn, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, because if this is a cost issue, what about the health care costs, repercussions of eating GMOs in the future? Because that $1.50 that you spend is maybe going to cost you in the long run $5 in health care costs.
Thank you for that, Lynn. And for our middle school students, this is an issue on the minds of many of our adult listeners because genetically modified organisms in our food is kind of a new thing. That's what this is about, is genetically modified organisms. Deidre, do you want to comment on this as a physiologist?
Well, I'd like to comment on it as a mom, actually. And I really feel like it's a process, you know, because looking at Sean, and he's in seventh grade, from first to seventh grade, and where my third grader, what he's eating in his school lunch compared to what Sean had as an option in his the hot school lunch, I think Anne's brought it really far. There's probably many other avenues that she can take. I just think it's a process. I think we've come as far as we have, and it's been very productive and very positive, and it's going to just keep taking years to get things like, you know, more organic or And again, the budget issues, but I think they're on the right path.
And to compare and contrast, Bella, by any chance, do you have your lunch here with you in the studio?
I do.
Well, in that case, let's take a look at what's in your lunch today. And let's look to see what kind of ingredients you can focus on and what you think about them. Go ahead and open it up right here. You don't have it with you, but sure, why don't you run out of the studio and go get your lunch? And while you do that, we'll talk about some other things, because there are genetically modified foods that may be an issue for some people. There's how much sugar is in the food. Some people think that the amount of fat that's in food is important. There's a lot of different issues that need to be balanced about what's in the food. There's even the issue of how many calories are in the food. Right now, I believe that the USDA is saying that an average school lunch should be, what, 500, 600, 700 calories?
Yeah, the new guidelines, which actually Boulder Valley is already going to be able to surpass the new guidelines that are going into effect for next school year. But the new guidelines for middle school, I think, max out calories at 750.
Okay, so 750 calories for lunch. Deidre, would that be enough for Sean?
Based on what, when Sean opened his lunch, you have to remember we're going back to the 20 minutes they have, the social time. So I pack a lunch, and I'm assuming maybe a fourth to a half of that gets eaten. So if he had, I can't remember what the number was, but let's say it was 1,200, I'll bet you he eats 400 or 500 of that, really. Maybe, I hope.
Plus the fact that he's an athlete. He's running. He's a soccer player. He runs
plays in the basketball.
He's just constantly on the move.
Right.
And having seen Sean, he is how tall?
He's almost 5 feet.
And is he kind of a thin kid, or is he a round kid?
He's a very well-defined thin kid. So he's muscular, but he's got very low body fat.
And he's probably eating, is my guess, around 3,000 calories a day, or maybe more.
Possibly between his breakfast, dinner, and whatever he eats at lunch.
How about it, Anne? If there's a student who needs that many calories, can they go back for seconds for hot lunch?
Actually, we supply with hot lunch unlimited salad bar, unlimited organic milk, and unlimited fruit. So there's a lot of and on the salad bars, we always have both animal and vegetable protein, as well as a whole grain salad every day. So there are a lot of options for kids that need more calories. And you know, there are a lot of kids that do need more calories. And I think we need to just assure that kids are getting the right kind of calories as well.
The right kind of calories. Well, how about it, Haley, when you had the hot lunch, what did you choose to have?
I had pizza one day, and then I had chicken the other day. And I thought both of them were really good, and it didn't seem like it used to when we were in elementary school. It seemed like it was more organic or more homemade than it used to be. And it's been the first time that I've had hot lunch in a while. So it was really, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
What motivated you to have the hot lunch?
I wanted to try it. One, for this show, and two, just to see, you know, how things have changed since I had it last.
What does it make you decide now about what you'll do in the future?
If I see something coming up on the menu that maybe I'd like for hot lunch, I probably would start eating hot lunch a little more than I used to.
So your thought is you might try it more often now?
Yeah.
Were your friends okay about you doing this, or did they kind of tease you?
They didn't really tease me, but no one at my table really eats hot lunch, and so it was kind of a weird contrast when I come up with there with hot lunch and everyone else has their packed lunch.
And how does this strike you as someone saying that they might try it occasionally? There's a little bit of social weirdness about eating it, but it might be worth a try now and then.
I think that that's wonderful. I mean, what I would hope is that kids that really dislike hot lunch would just try it sometimes and see what it's like. And listen, there's 29,000 students in the school district. We are not going to please them all every day. I mean, as moms, we don't please our kids all the time every day with what we cook them. So we can't imagine that 29,000 people are going to all be happy. But if everybody tries it a little and supports it a little, that's fabulous.
So that's a possibility. How about you, Haley? Bella, are you ever going to try the hot lunch again, do you think?
Probably only when it's pizza, because the fried chicken or whatever was yesterday was not appealing or good to me.
And you don't like to see a bone in chicken, is that correct?
Yeah, I don't like bones. It's just makes me sad.
Okay. So, and in fact, that's something that we hear from a lot of students is that we're kind of a chicken nugget nation. And the idea of bones and things is a little bit repellent. Even if somebody does eat animal protein, if they are vegetarians, it's even more repellent. So that's one thing. Although there are vegetarian options, would you go for one of those?
Yeah, probably, because my mom buys the Morningstar chicken nugget things, and I devour those things.
Yeah, so we've kind of trained ourselves in a different way than seeing food from its source. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah.
And what do you have to say about that, Ann Cooper, while Bella opens up her lunch here?
Well, I think one of the challenges about transitioning a program is where people are in it. When we can get the students from kindergarten, they're going to know that chicken has bones in it. And depending on your demographic, maybe you don't know that chicken has bones, or maybe it seems off-putting to you. But if that's what you're used to, so the longer the program is in existence, the more students will get used to the kind of food that we're serving. But I do get that, you know, we've now have a whole generation of children who think chicken nuggets are a food group. And, you know, chicken nuggets, by and large, might not even be chicken, you know. But you just don't really know that.
That is an interesting possibility, that we're more into processed foods these days. But let's see what you brought for lunch today, Bella. You're being very brave to share this. So what do you have here?
I have baked macaroni and cheese that me and my mother made. I have goldfish. I have two Girl Scout cookies that are Thin Mints, and I have a V8 V-Fusion Light, which is strawberry banana flavored.
Well, Bella, you're a healthy person. You're an athlete also, and you're fit and all of that. What do you think is the healthiest part of your lunch there?
Probably the drink, to be honest.
What do you think in terms of if you just ate a whole pile of what you are offering here, which one would be the one to eat the least of?
Probably the macaroni and cheese. It would give me a major stomach ache.
Oh, well, my guess would be, well, let's ask Chef Ann Cooper, what do you think is the healthiest thing in that lunch there?
I'd have to look at the ingredients, but it really could be the mac and cheese, actually. If the mac and cheese was made from scratch, so you cooked your own pasta, you grated cheese, you had a little milk, you thickened it up, that is not an unhealthy part of a meal. I would say the thing that's really missing here, or what would you say the thing to a healthy meal that's really missing here is? What do you think you could add to make this a little healthier?
Orange.
Yeah, fruit and maybe vegetable.
Yeah.
So the thing that we really, one of the things that people listening to this should know is when I was in Berkeley, we did a study of the school lunches. And what it showed was that 3 times more kids, our children that ate hot lunch, ate 3 times more vegetables than kids that brought their lunch from home. And I think that this is exactly what you're seeing here. Bella's lunch isn't necessarily unhealthy, but it's missing healthy components. And in our schools, we have salad bars in every single school with fresh fruits and vegetables every day. And the more we can get kids to eat fresh fruits and vegetables, the healthier they'll be. And it's about a balanced meal, a fully balanced meal.
Yes, and Deidre, we'll have you tell us some things, and then we'll catch Dave, who's on the line waiting to talk with us.
Okay, I'd just like to add to Anne's regarding how I'm seeing my third grader approach the healthy lunch program. He eats salad bar every day.
I love that.
I love it, too. So I think what we're talking about here when the middle school children are expressing where they, I think we are step-laddering it, and they're getting, you know, not that we've lost them, but I really think that they're going to be a harder sell. I think the kids trying it, more kudos to them. But I think the fact that we're bringing up these kids from the elementary school, that they're just used to this, that's really a prize. So I think that we're doing a great job from that perspective. And I see it in my third grader.
Perspectives. And now with us on the line is Dave calling in. Dave, welcome to KGNU.
Thanks. I guess I feel a lot of positive things are happening, and I appreciate all the attempts to improve the nutrition. I sort of feel like there's a parallel to the the national health care discussion, where when we discussed health care, we didn't really discuss the content of health care. We discussed sort of the money about it and the logistics, and no one talked about nutrition, for example, in the national health care debate, or avoiding antibiotics and things like that. And what I worry about in the nutrition situation is that I've been interested in nutrition for 35 years, and I'm still trying to figure out what's healthy, you know. So over time, what is healthy tends to evolve for each of us and for our culture. And at this point, we have a culture that's eating an incredibly unhealthy diet. I think most of us are aware of that. And then how to deal with it and make some kind of change is very difficult. So to make a concrete example, for example, macaroni and cheese or pizza is never really ever going to be healthy food. It's processed carbs. It's heated cheese. It's not going to be healthy. And then it depends how far you're going to take it. Some people feel dairy in general, it shouldn't be included in diet for most children. So I could sort of go on and on, but the point is, how do we really deal with the content in nutrition, like the discussion of having fruits and vegetables and salad? That should actually be at least 50% or even more of a meal, but it's almost impossible in this culture to do that. And earlier, one person had said, you know, we don't eat these celebratory foods every day. And I actually think we do. I think if you looked at some of those kids' meals that were mentioned on the air earlier today, some of them were almost 100% carbs. Certainly they included fruit drinks and lots of fruit, and which are the healthy side of things, and then flat-out junk food like potato chips that become simple carbs the fastest and things like that. So I think we're in a real dilemma, and I'd love to hear the chef and the other experts discuss the real issues of nutrition.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you for that comment. I hear you saying that a one-size-fits-all nutrition policy still will have some question marks all over it. I'm curious, what did you have for breakfast this morning, just to give us some context?
Myself, at breakfast, I usually either have eggs and a bunch of vegetables or a high-quality meat protein and a bunch of vegetables. And I think my real point is that each of us struggles to find good nutrition. And for myself and a lot of my friends, I'm noticing people go to lower and lower carbs and more quality protein and lots of fruits. And I'm sorry, more like lots of vegetables and a little bit of fruit, because that's really sugar as well. So that's tough to do in our culture. That's really my point. It's tough for adults, and it's tough, really tough for kids.
Question for you, Dave, is, are you eating more fat? If you're eating less carbs, are you eating more fat?
Yeah, I certainly eat fat when I eat nuts and nut butters, and I use coconut oil and some olive oil, and there's definitely fats in there. And for myself, if I eat too many, I'm aware that it affects my gallbladder, and, you know, it affects certain aspects of elimination that I'm familiar with. And these things are, you know, are things we teach our kids, and, you know, how certain foods affect each of us. So, yeah, I do try to definitely include fats as well as some supplements of essential fatty acids. So,
well, thank you, Dave.
And also one other thing, things like shelled hemp seeds have essential fatty acids and high level of protein, and people are starting to eat different kinds of seeds and things like that.
Well, thank you for that, Dave, and I'll let you know that last comment about the hemp seeds got Ann Cooper giggling. I've got a feeling that's a little hard to find on the commodity market. How about it, Ann?
Well, I actually really agree that it's hard to be able to eat as healthy as we might want in our society. I will say that we try super hard in the school district. I mean, one of the reasons why we have salad bars in every school, and one of the reasons why we have animal protein and whole grains on the salad bars, and they're filled with vegetables, is to be able to get kids to eat fruits and vegetables. And you're right, we should be eating more fruit. The new USDA guide, sorry, more vegetables. The new USDA guidelines that are now going to be coming into effect for next school year are, you know, they may be imperfect, but they're taking us a huge step forward. We're seeing a reduction in the amount of protein that that kids need to have so that we can up their caloric count through vegetables and somewhat in grains and things like that. So I do think it's a struggle. I think if we teach our kids and feed our kids to eat fresh foods, fresh vegetables, whole grains, and healthy proteins, that we will go a long way to solving some of our health concerns. But it is difficult, and I think schools can be part of the solution.
Well, that's an interesting answer, and we have Deidre with us also, who was nodding her head as Dave was talking about the fact that even though milk is kind of required for students and dairy, there are questions about whether it's all that healthy, plus whether it's necessary, and in some cases, whether it really works for some kids. Deidre, as a physiologist, do you want to respond to that?
Well, again, I just want to respond as a parent, and as Ann was saying, and it sounds like Dave was saying too, the nutrition requirements, it evolves and changes, and just to narrow down what people need is a difficult thing, and it can be very individual as well. There's children that have lactose intolerance. There's a lot of issues regarding how milk is processed, but there's other parts of it. You need the calcium. I think you need some dairy. But my point that I wanted to make is you have to really work within the framework of what we've got going on in the world. And when you worry about all the snacks and treats that the kids are having, there is a balance, because if you totally cut that out of a child's diet, then they're going to want it real bad, and then eventually that's all they're going to eat. So you have to find a place where they're kind of allowed to have it within the framework of the fruits and vegetables and proteins. You fill them up on that, let them have a little bit of treats here and there, and then they won't want it so desperately at another time.
Deidre, thank you for your comments. And with us in the studio now are some students from Centennial Middle School who've been part of a cooking class. And let's see what they say about that idea of you need some treats and you also need to learn about good nutrition. Let's start by introducing Sam. Sam, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, I'm Sam. I was part of the Food Facts and Fun class earlier this year. And what I noticed is what we made was a fantastic mixture of treats and healthy foods. And what I noticed about the healthy foods was that the ingredients that we put in them were healthy, so that in return they made a healthy meal, and then the treats were good to eat, but we didn't necessarily use the best ingredients.
You didn't always use the best ingredients. What do you mean there?
For the treats, like, you need some bad ingredients to make them taste good because they're treats. So that's what I liked about the treats.
And how about you, Kira? Welcome to KGNU. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Kira, and I go to Centennial Middle School, and I'm in eighth grade. And I was in the Food Facts and Fun class this year.
You were in the Food Facts and Fun class, and you also eat school lunches pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And did it help inform you, the fact that you were cooking? Did that help you know more about what you were eating when you eat hot lunches or cold lunches?
Not really, because we didn't really make, like, the same types of foods as we eat in school lunches.
So, but you just enjoyed learning about how to cook, and
yeah,
you're in the school cafeteria cooking. Did that affect how you look at the people who work in the cafeteria and how you think about that kitchen?
Yeah, I always thought the kitchen was, like, a lot bigger, but, like, when you get in there, it's, like, pretty small. And so I think it's pretty impressive that the people can build a lot of, like, a lot of school lunch for a lot of kids in just a really small kitchen with only a couple people.
Sierra, welcome to KGNU.
Hi, my name is Sierra. I go to Centennial Middle School, and I'm in eighth grade. and I participated in the food facts and fun class.
Now, when you were there, did that affect your attitude toward food to see how ingredients go together to make food?
Yeah, I'm more precautious about what I eat because now I know what goes into more foods than I did before.
Well, what do you think, Anne? Does when kids help cook, does that affect how they look at food, do you think?
Absolutely. If we want to change children's relationship to food, we have to cook with them, shop with them, grow food with them, have them really participate. Because, you know, just as Sierra said, when you're actually making it, you have some ownership over it, and you start to look at it and think about it. And I think all of those things are super important.
We have a caller on the line. Noelle, welcome to KGNU. What's your comment?
Hi, thank you. I have children, and I have had children in the Rain District and in the Valley School District. And I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Anne for what she did with the Boulder Valley School District lunches. The difference is night and day between the two districts. My daughter, who's now at Niwot High, she's a vegetarian, and there's literally nothing for her to eat in school lunch because there's the meat option and everything that's served hot. And so all she can eat is pizza. There isn't a salad bar. There isn't anything else for her to eat. So there's a huge contrast. And on that note, I'm wondering if this district, Boulder Valley School District, will partner with the districts around it to help them get up to speed.
How about it, Anne?
I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Noelle.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words. We, you know, I have 200 employees spread across this 550-square-mile district, and every single one of them works so hard to make sure that we serve the best possible food. I haven't ever eaten in Niwot, and I've never seen their program, and so I'm not going to really comment on the program. But I'm always happy to work with other districts. Our doors are always open. We love visitors. We love sharing information. And we're an open book. And any districts that want to come and work with us or see what we're doing, I welcome it.
Well, yes, it is exciting to see some things happening in Boulder Valley. And yet at the same time, 70% of students do not eat the hot lunches. And not all parents are supportive. Some parents think that why bother with this being a program? And some of the students here in the air studio here don't eat the school lunches very often. And Sam, you're an example of that. You represent the 70% of students who don't eat hot lunch. Tell me, what is the logic behind that?
I think that the students from KC before me brought up a good point, whereas to the waiting in line factor of getting hot lunch, and I just think it's easier for me to, like, also, as Sierra said, when I make my own school lunch, then I know, like, what's going to be in it, and I'm excited to eat it, and so that's when I bring the cold lunch, then it's more like familiar to me rather than just eating a hot lunch.
I hear you saying it's partly the ownership that you get to have control when you bring your own lunch in. What if by eating the hot lunches, you gave control to the school to provide healthier, nutritious food made from scratch to everyone? Is that more of an adult issue, or is that something that touches you as a middle school student?
Yeah, that would be more appealing if, like, we understood, like, what was more of, like, going into making the foods rather than just, like, being served something that we don't even know what it is.
Control seems to matter to you. What if you sometimes helped the cafeteria staff figure out what, you know, what if you helped make one of those recipes sometime? What would you think of that?
I think that would be fun. It would be like a food facts and fun type of thing, and I would be interested in that.
And Cooper wants to tell you something here.
Well, I think the students right here know, but we really value students' input, and we have Iron Chef competitions, and this year we have two of them coming up, a middle school Iron Chef and an elementary school Iron Chef. They're both in March. And this is a way for students all across the district to come up with recipes that meet the USDA and BVSD guidelines, that meet our costs, and you think are actually really good. And the winning recipes always go on our menu. So this is our third year. We actually have four or five recipes that students have come up with on the menus right now.
And for another comment on these ideas, here is Scott Griffith, who has led the Food, Nutrition, Facts, and Fun class at Centennial. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Shelley. Thanks for having us here this morning. You know, one of the exciting things about teaching food, facts, and fun, as Ann mentioned earlier, is kids really begin to understand the basic building blocks of the ingredients that go into making all the different meal items. It's not just how to create a meal, but how to make a loaf of bread and what goes into that loaf of bread, and to learn about the different ingredients that makes that a healthy side dish for a particular meal. So it's very exciting.
It is exciting, and at the same time, a lot of the foods that the kids requested in the food packs and fun class were things like Rice Krispies and brownies. And so I'm wondering, Kira, how did it affect you to see what the actual ingredients are for something like that when you were doing those cooking classes?
I thought it was really cool to see what was actually inside of, like, the unhealthy things that we made, because I never, like, thought they were, like, they could be, like, that healthy, because, like, we put some really healthy ingredients into some of them, and then there were some with not so healthy ingredients, and I thought it was just cool to see all of that.
How about you, Sierra? What did you think about the combination of making things like frittatas versus making Rice Krispie treats?
I totally agree with Kira. It's cool to see what's in them, because you never really think twice about what you're going to eat if it's a Rice Krispie. You just know that it tastes good, so you want to eat it. And so, yeah.
And I like to say that one of the cool things about teaching the class is that when the kids add what they perceive as healthy, and actually are healthy because they learn about nutrition levels and how to read labels and such, and they finally bake something with healthy ingredients in them and they taste wonderful to them, then they come away with a better understanding of, oh, okay, healthy doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't taste that good, that healthy can taste good, and that when they see school lunches and they connect with an ingredient or a menu item on that, that they might try it. And that's really what we want kids to do.
But if I recall, there is a challenge that you face, Scott Griffith, with your class, and that's that to actually create a food that has the ingredients of a hot lunch in the school, your budget really can't afford that, because it's expensive to get things like chicken, or it's expensive to get things that go into making a real lunch. And the budget for a nutrition class, that's hard to do.
That is true. However, I think, again, with these 21st century skills that we want to impart on our students, is that being innovative and working with what we have is a challenge. And to be creative in the kitchen requires adults and kids to come up with recipes that meet the guidelines both nutritionally and economically, and I think it's a win-win situation. It's definitely a challenge, but kids are the creators of these recipes, and I have no doubt they can come up with some really good ideas for our lunch program in the future.
Let's have you comment on that, Ann Cooper, and then I want to hear what you students say about that too.
I think it's absolutely correct. The more students can feel some ownership over the school food program, the more they can have input on it, the more they can really think thoughtfully about it, I think the better off we are. I just want to make one comment. We've used the 30% of the kids are eating. I want to just make sure we understand. It's about 35% overall. In elementary school, it's almost 50%. In middle school, it's about 35 to 40%. In high school, it's only 17%. So it skews those numbers a little bit. I do want to say one other thing, and that is between 2008, which was before I came, to now, we're actually up 5.5% in participation. So over that time, even with the challenges, more and more kids are eating.
More and more kids are eating, and we're looking at this possibility that if kids participated some more in helping make the food sometimes, that would that make it more appealing? Kira and Sam, what do you think?
I think it would make it a lot more appealing, because kids would, like, be in the kitchen and they would know what was going into the food they were eating, and they would be having a lot of fun making it, and to, like, make something and then just give it to someone else is never fun, but, well, sometimes, but to make it and then actually get to try it and see how well you did is really fun.
What would happen if you ever went on a tour of one of the popular foods that are packaged foods, if we could find a tour to go to see how they make things in those kitchens? You know, like some favorite popular snack food, if it was made around town. Right now you get to picture the beautiful package it's in. What would happen if you got to see where it's produced, do you think?
If it was, like, produced in, like, a factory or something, I think it would make kids not really want to eat it as much, because they would know that it's not really coming from the most sanitary place sometimes, and it would just, like, lower the factor of appeal to them.
Interesting thought. We have one more caller on the line. Let's see if we can catch Lynn, who is calling for a follow-up. And so, Lynn, hold on a second. Let's see if we can get you on the line. Welcome, Lynn. What's your follow-up question, real briefly?
I think that there's a solution here for the long lines, is to just serve soup at lunch. Just have a couple kinds and bread to go with it, V8 juice and chocolate milk and some fruit. And maybe just have fruit and water instead of juices, but have some V8 juice.
Okay, well, thanks. We have just 3 minutes, so let's see.
And
what
you could save a lot of money that way.
Just soup. Okay, how about it, kids? Soup lines. What do
That's
you think of that?
That's an excellent idea, Lynn.
Well, are you saying that seriously? Would you eat lunch if you just had soup?
Absolutely, I would.
You like soup that much?
Yes.
And would you like us to bring back chocolate milk?
Yes.
How about you, Ann Cooper? What do you have to say about that?
A couple things. We actually serve soup in middle and high school, but soup as a complete meal is very difficult or almost impossible to fit the USDA guidelines. It's, you know, to be able to get the protein into a bowl of soup and assure that the right amount of protein is there is very, very difficult. It might be less expensive, but we still have to follow all the USDA guidelines.
How about that chocolate milk question that never goes away?
You know, it's really not out there too much. But, you know, in my world, chocolate milk is soda and drag, and most of it has more sugar per ounce than Coke, and it doesn't belong as part of a school meal. It's absolutely fine for parents to serve it at home, but 70 to 80% of all flavored milk in America is served in schools, which means that parents aren't serving it at home. And if they're not serving it at home, I don't feel the need to serve it in schools.
Did you really mean that when you said that there's more sugar per ounce in milk, chocolate milk, flavored milks, than there is in a soda?
In many of them. They're now making flavored milks with sugar substitutes, non-nutrient sweeteners, but by and large, yes, there's a tremendous amount of sugar in chocolate milk.
But Ann Cooper, the USDA still says that it's a great beverage, especially if it's 0% fat. It's okay for it to have all that sugar. Why don't you say that?
Because I don't have the dairy lobby giving me money. But even more importantly, with the new dietary guidelines and a maximum calorie count, it's going to be really hard to include that kind of sugar calories in the meals.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And we have just 2 minutes left, Sierra. I'd like to hear from you. You're here being kind enough to tell us what you think about school lunches. How much is this on your radar screen? I mean, how much do you think about food and health?
Well, now that I've been in the class, I think about it a lot more than I did, because I didn't really care about what, well, I did care, but not as much as I do now.
It's a wild time for you guys to care, because you're young, you're healthy, you don't see all of the side effects that might come from your choices of food at this point. Kara, how about it? Do you think about those things up ahead? Is this the time for habits to be formed?
Yeah, I think it is the time for habits to be formed, and if you get into, like, good eating habits, like, when you're, like, 13 or 14, then they'll continue for the rest of your life, and then, by 2040, if everyone is obese, like, if you keep up those healthy patterns, you'll probably be, like, the one person who isn't.
Sam, how about you? What do you see in your future in food and health?
I think that I will keep thinking back to my food facts and fun days when, like, we learned about healthy nutrition and stuff like that, and then I can make my choices off of what I would want to eat that's healthy for me.
Well, thank you all for joining us. We would love to talk with you more, and thank you to our listeners for letting us share these intriguing insights from the real people who are the experts on school lunches. You can find out more by going to our website, eatyourradio.kgnu.org. We have a link to this series also on the kgnu.org website under This Morning Magazine. So lots of ways that you can connect up with it. And you can find out more by going to the Boulder Valley School District's food services sites where they show what the menus are, and adults can go in and try them too. Lots of ways to do this. I'm Shelley Schlender. This concludes The Morning Magazine. It's 9:30. Let's go now to the Morning Sound Alternative.